Joint Committee on Ways and Means for Thursday, February 7th. And we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 1080. I want to make clear to those who are here to listen to the proceedings that we are in work session. Work session means that this is the time when members of the committee will educate themselves if they have questions that they don't understand about the bill, and they will also debate the merits of the bill. It is not a public hearing, and we will not be taking public testimony tonight. Staff?
Co-chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1080 requires applicants to provide proof of U.S. citizenship or legal presence in the United States before the Oregon Department of Transportation can issue, renew, or replace a driver's license, a driver's permit, or an identification card. If a document is issued to an individual that is not a legal citizen but authorized to be in the U.S., the expiration date of the document will be the date the individual is no longer authorized to stay in the U.S. or until 1 year from the issuance of the document. I think the big thing to realize here, and I think the majority of the fiscal impact, is that ODOT is required to verify the legitimacy of the documents submitted for proof of legal presence. For example, Social Security numbers must be verified to the Social Security Administration as valid and belonging to the individuals presenting the Social Security number. In addition, ODOT can also verify immigration documents through the Department of Homeland Security. There are any number of documents that ODOT may use, and through administrative rule, they will decide what types of documents are acceptable to prove legal presence. Many of those, like birth certificates, cannot be verified automatically, and ODOT will verify the legitimacy of those documents visually. And I think that's an important thing to understand, is that there are not nationwide databases or systems out there that ODOT can verify the legitimacy of documents automatically. So there is a certain portion that they can, Social Security numbers and immigration documents, but other we consider, I guess, normal documents like birth certificates or marriage license and those types of things, there is no central way that they can verify those automatically. The bill also provides some exemptions under specific circumstances. I know there are some exemptions in there for religious reasons of perhaps why you might not want to have your picture on your driver's license. In addition, the bill also allows ODOT to raise fees to pay for the additional requirements and the labor necessary for verifying legal presence. The bill requires ombudsman services to assist applicants in meeting documentation requirements. And the fiscal impact is $1,998,129 other funds, which are primarily highway funds in 0709, and $1,780,770 other funds in 0911. And additionally, ODOT has identified that there are 6.55 positions and 14 FTE or full-time equivalents in 0709 and 14.25 positions and 17 FTE in 0911.
Thank you. As a resource to the committee, we also have Mr. McClellan from the Department of Motor Vehicles here. Could you make yourself available to the committee? Thank you. This bill has received a great deal of public testimony and comment during the interim as it was being developed and more recently in Senate Policy Committee yesterday. Its path to our floors, if it gets there, is through this committee, and so while we normally focus almost exclusively on fiscal matters, since this is the only opportunity for House members to question and clarify points of the bill, I'm going to provide a little bit more leeway in our avenues of investigation tonight. So committee members are comfortable that they have enough information to make good decisions. I also want to thank my colleague, Representative Beyer, who chairs the House Transportation Committee, for being here as a resource to us as well. With that introduction, are there questions or discussion on the bill? Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. This has to do with the verification of documentation, and what I notice is that in Section 2, Subsection 3 of the bill, which is on the top of, just down from the top of the second page, it refers to Social Security numbers being verified, that they basically must be verified by the department. And then down in Section 7, it talks in permissive language about the department being given permission to verify identity source documents. And I was just looking for clarity around whether these two were in conflict or why there were two clauses in the bill that appeared to address things differently.
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, my name is Tom McClellan. I'm the Acting Administrator of the Drug and Motor Vehicle Services Division. The question you ask, to answer that, Section 2, Sub 3 deals specifically around the Social Security number that's provided by the applicant. It is a requirement by the bill that we would verify with the Social Security Administration the validity of that document. Under Section 7, further down the page, it's permissive, exactly what your committee staff was indicating, that some systems are not available today for us to do that verification. So it's permissive for us to do that verification once those systems are up and running and we can connect to them.
Mr. Chair, can we get staff to go into the fiscal aspects of this bill a little bit for the membership?
We have completed that part of it. Mr. Walker, excuse me.
No problem. Co-chair, members of the committee, Senator Schrader, are there specific items that you would like me to discuss about the fiscal impact?
Well, on the revenue side, as well as the fiscal and how that would play out, what sources of funds in particular and how that would impact our general fund budget and that sort of thing.
Okay.
We've alluded to that already.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, the fiscal impact statement, the primary numbers are from ODOT, and the Department of Motor Vehicles has a very extensive database, kind of time motion studies. They would make Frederick Taylor blush, I think. And they have identified, the best they can, the number of documents out there and the possible realm of, for example, the latest figures we have are 3% of the state's population are, would have some sort of immigration documents. And of those documents, of those people, there may be, half of them that don't have the required documents that we do or that we need. And so they're going to have to come back a couple of times, and each time they show up, then there's going to be time associated with that. So the Department of Motor Vehicles has done their best to identify those types of transactions and get an idea of the universe of how many of those transactions there are. And then they build up that to what the FTE impact is. And then the FTE really drives the fiscal from their standpoint. And the vast majority of the funds are highway funds, which are other funds, and also some transportation operating funds are in here also, but those are fairly minor.
Mm-hmm.
The revenue impact, the Legislative Revenue Committee has gone through and they went through the revenue projections that ODOT had provided us. In the bill, the increase in fees charged for the various driver's license, commercial permits, identification cards, most of them have increased by $4.50. And I believe $3 of that was provided in the 2007 session for the biometric work that the department is doing. And I as long as I can see Mr. McClellan to continue to nod, I feel okay about this. $1.50 in the initial fee increase will be to cover the increased cost for doing this additional work, and I believe by statute the department has to recover those funds. And then in January of 2010, there will be an additional dollar added onto those, and I think most of those are taken care of in the statute, but they are phased in.
Senator Carter.
Madam Chair. So, Mr. Walker, are you saying that when if a person loses and have to replace their card, it's going to cost approximately $4.50 each time that they've lost their card to get it renewed?
Mr. Walker, perhaps Mr. McClellan would like to take that one.
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, once this takes effect, there will be a standard fee for a replacement card and for an original and for a renewal. And those fees are specified in, with an increase taking effect July 1 of this year. And $1.50 is correct. That would be to cover the costs associated with this bill, with $3 from Senate Bill 640 from the 2005 session that was back even further than it indicated. That takes effect in July, and then there's another dollar on top of that, January 1 of 2010, which is to cover the cost associated with issuing a lower-priced card that's a limited term. It's not a full 8 years. So those individuals who apply, who have an immigration document that has 2 years left of expiration on that document, we would issue a driver's license or an ID card only for the length of time that they are authorized to be in this country. So we would tie that expiration, our expiration of our card, to the expiration of the immigration document. They would pay a lower fee. Part of covering the cost, but our cost is very similar to issue that card as it is for an 8-year card. So what we've built into this is a small increase in the standard 8-year card to recover some of that cost that we will not be covered with a lower fee.
I'm sure the reason because at our church we have a homeless program, and when people are homeless tend to have to take their things with them wherever they go, and if they lose a license, it sounds like the state of Oregon is going to be making a little money off poor people in this country when that happens, because of the kind of replacement fees that they would be paying. And it just seems to be kind of unfair for that to be a part of this bill, that poor people and homeless people, you know, lose things like everybody else does, and it just sounds like that's an unfair piece that is in this bill in terms of cost.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion? Senator Bates?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I want to ask a question, two questions actually. The first question concerns the actual cost of placing this burden on the people who are to issue those licenses, and then I want to talk about the database you'll be developing. My first question is, I recently got my license renewed. The people that were working hard, took about an hour and a half of work to get my new license. I went in and got it done. Long lines, people waiting to get in. How are you going to have, was it $2 million a biennium? For $2 million a biennium, you're going to ask for verification of this now by getting, let's say, a Social Security card, and you're going to somehow verify that. Like, I don't know exactly how you're going to verify that. I can produce probably a pretty good Social Security card off my computer, by the way, you know, if I'm careful. You know, take it into you. How can you verify that and know that you really verified it, or are you just going through the motions, number one? And number two, how much time is that going to take, and how can you do that for $2 million, considering the vast number of people involved?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, what we're verifying is the data contained on the card. We're not verifying, we do a visual inspection of the card to determine if it appears to be authentic or not. But what we're checking is the Social Security number, a piece of the name, and the date of birth against the database of the Social Security Administration to see if there's a match. We started doing that for all drivers on Monday this week, according to the governor's executive order. We've been doing it for commercial drivers for almost a year. And there is a little additional time in the transaction, but not a lot for that piece. Where the time comes in is where people don't have a social security number, or who doesn't verify, there can be additional time in explaining that to the applicant, or maybe finding out that they have a different name today from what they had when they originally got the social security card. A marriage, for example, where there's a name change, we will ask for a document to prove that there's been a name change, and then try the new name against, or the previous name, actually. We'll trace it back to check it against the Social Security Administration's database.
Senator? I still have questions in my mind what you can actually do for the price you're talking about, but we'll let that go for a minute. So I understand this, if you get a, I want to make sure I'm clear on this, if you get a Social Security card, you're not verifying this person is actually the one you're talking to, you're just verifying data is all.
I'm Co-Chair Senator Bates. In this step, yes, that's true. We're also doing other document verification, and later this summer we'll be able to do facial recognition of a photo that the person takes against the database to see if it's the same person that was here before, and to see if you've applied for and received a license in another name, possibly, that's in our database. That's another step that we take to verify and authenticate that the person is, who is in fact, the right person.
Follow up again, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Bates.
And I'll get off this topic. You can do that for $2 million.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, the facial recognition work, that's completely outside of this bill. That's something that was authorized 2.5 years ago. The $2 million primarily is staff time associated with the additional transactions and time that it takes to serve people, as well as the programming that it requires to put these systems in place, especially to issue a card that's of less than 8 years in duration. There's significant IT implications for that piece. And so, this is the first biennium. A lot of that cost is associated with the systems work, preparing to be able to make the changes that are authorized by this bill.
Madam Chair, I want to ask some more questions along that line. I was to say that I have no reservation that this is going to be done for $2 million. It's hard to believe. Second question, real quickly.
Yes, I know.
If I remember right, 2 or 3 years ago, a large part of the database was entered by a hacker or some other source for Department of Motor Vehicles and was made public. We now have a database that includes Social Security numbers, many of which of us don't want to give you our Social Security number because we don't want that out in the public. What are you going to do to protect that database, and can you assure us that another hacker will not get into this database as has happened in the past?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, there has not been a hacker to poke into our systems to access data. We have very secure systems. Doesn't mean that someone couldn't eventually break through, but we have not had any inappropriate release of data. Prior to the changes in the public records law in the state, people had much easier access to data on individuals, and companies can get information and CDs, and some of those probably are still floating around, but it's been many years since that change was made. We're very comfortable in the security that we provide for our system.
Further questions, Senator?
No. Nope.
Representative Hannah?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Mr. McClellan, the change to allow DMV to issue the temporary permit for up to 90 days plus the 60-day extension, if the applicant presents proof of attempts to obtain the documents, can you describe that process for us, please?
Madam Chair, Representative Hannah, we'll have to work this through. We haven't done this one before, so we'll have to determine what the procedure is going to be. But adequate evidence would be perhaps information about an attempt with the Social Security Administration or a letter that they may have received that initially was a denial, but they're working on it. The whole intent of this is to help people with that process that it takes to get a new or a replacement passport, a birth certificate, Social Security card. It can take months with some of these other mostly federal agencies to get those documents. So the intent here is to provide them something they can still drive for up to 90 days and then an extension of another 60 days, ultimately 5 months, to have the time to get the documents they need to be able to continue to drive. So we'll be working out the procedures more specifically about what we would accept. There may be some judgment, definitely, that would have to be applied to this.
Follow up, please.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you, and I understand that we're putting you in the microscope to a degree here, but can you enlighten us as to what timeline you might think that process will take so that, you know, as we move forward, people have a pretty solid idea that they could say to themselves legitimately, I wrote a letter, I mailed the documentation via certified mail or something, and I present that, there's a likelihood that if that is the rule that's built in, I can feel comfortable knowing that I can get the extension for that period.
Madam Chair, Richard Hand, I think that would be a very good example of a situation. Or someone coming in, they've waited to the last minute to renew their license. Weren't aware that this time around there's more documentation that they need to provide. They've got it at home, or they've got it in the safety deposit box. We might issue this as well to carry them over until they can get back in to provide that document to us.
Follow up.
Yes, Representative.
And I'm pressing you here, but what about the timeline for your agency to come back to us and say, you know, we've got our arms around a process or some specific rules that people could say with certainty, if I've done these things, I have a high degree of likelihood that I can get the temporary permit.
Madam Chair, Representative, we would start the rulemaking at the end of this month. As soon as the session is over, this bill is passed, we'd start the rulemaking. A draft would go to our Transportation Commission, and we would hold public hearings most likely around the state because of the nature of this particular bill and the change. At that point, you would see draft language and have a chance to review that to see if it's specific enough to meet the need. And we would certainly take comments and suggested language to improve upon those rules before they're finalized by the Transportation Commission.
Thank you.
Representative Jensen?
Almost everything that I had in mind was covered with Representative Hanna's questions, except I'm not sure that I had I heard from you what type of a time element you're looking at to drop the or to before you can put the administrative rules in place that will make it possible for the agency to therefore work with this. Does that take 6 months, a year, 2 years?
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, we've got several sections within this bill that have a July 1, 2008 effective date, primarily because of that rulemaking process. We want to do that full and complete, have plenty of public input, but we feel pretty confident we can have those provisions in place by July 1st with the rules also passed and finalized.
Thank you. Thank you.
Senator Cordes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I reflect on the policy choice in front of us and the budget implications, I'm looking more broadly at what are the implications of what we are looking at and about to do. And I think it's important that we be mindful of this time in our history in the state of Oregon. Let me say also that our votes are a reflection of our values. Legislative bodies, including this Joint Ways and Means Committee, establish a legacy through the policy and budget choices that we make. And again, those choices are a reflection of values. And so I ask us, as we are sitting here, thinking about this policy and how we might move forward, that we be mindful that we're establishing what will be our legacy in this so-called special supplemental session. And with that said, I wish to be identified with a statement made by Chief Ron Louis, retired, of the Hillsborough Police Department. And this is what he said, and I quote, "Perhaps the damage we are doing in this process to our sense of community in Oregon is what should be considered first. The rhetoric and anger being directed at undocumented residents is akin to pointing out that the other end of the communal boat has a leak in it. We are in this together," said Chief Louis.
and we will sink or float together. My years of public safety experience, he said, tell me that there is an important axiom in public safety. The more you marginalize a group of people, the more they inadvertently become victimized, and in the long run, it's the sense of community that helps to protect everyone. With that said, Madam Chair, and I thank you for indulging my comments, which are also heartfelt. Again, I'm just very mindful of what we are doing from a historical standpoint today. Chief Hui also said that when faced with issues of border security and immigration compliance as a nation, we seek public policy to solve these issues. And it is suggested in this policy that we limit drivers to those who have citizenship or legal residency status. But this will make our roadways less safe, said Chief Louie. And this is predictable with absolute certainty. That serious consequence is avoidable. All we need to do is identify a better solution. And to conclude with a statement with from Chief Louie, he also said, we should not seek to fix a federal immigration problem through our driver's license system. Driver's license should be just that, a process to promote driving skills and not a replacement for a citizenship and residency document. The consequences of confusing these issues will be harmful to our citizens and have an adverse impact on public safety. And I will end where I began, Madam Chair, with a statement that perhaps the damage that we are doing in this process is to our sense of community in Oregon, and that is what should be considered first. And I say that sincerely, and I hope that we weigh that thought as we move forward.
Thank you, Senator.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I have a number of questions about the implications of this, but they're really, they aren't questions that you answer so much with objective information as they are questions about overarching policy that just need discussion. So I'm going to limit my questions at this time to what I think are fiscal aspects. I have three questions. First, and by the way, I want to acknowledge that we've received many pages of documents at our place tonight, and we just saw them as we sat down, so I haven't been able to look through all of it. The governor has issued an executive order. How are the costs being covered since this bill has not been adopted or voted on? How would it be covered if there wasn't this bill?
Madam Chair, Representative Nathanson, we have implemented the verification of Social Security numbers as a result of the governor's executive order, and we've changed the list of acceptable documents that a person can use to obtain a driver's license or an ID card. The costs up to this point have been in the preparations for that. Basically, if we've eaten those costs, they're not significant, but they have been a cost associated with connecting up with the Social Security Administration's database. It's called SOLV, S-S-O-L-V, it's the name of the system. A little bit of programming, about 100 hours of programming, to expand beyond commercial drivers for the verification so that all drivers will be verified. We also conducted a public hearing at the state fairgrounds. There was some cost associated with using that facility, a facilitator to help with that process. Lots of brochures and signs and things like that to communicate with the public with the change that is taking place. But other than that, there hasn't been a major fiscal impact associated with it. We're just finishing our first week with the new changes, and we're monitoring workloads and the types of calls that we're receiving, the volumes of calls, to see what other types of effect we might see. It's important to point out that the governor's executive order does not go nearly as far as Senate Bill 1080 does, the bill that's in front of you today. The governor cannot impose a legal presence requirement in the state. He can direct an executive agency with rulemaking authority to restrict the documents that we accept, and he can direct us to verify a social security number. But he can't require us to ensure that person is legally present in the state. We also can't issue a driver's license for less than 8 years without a statutory change. And there's other provisions that are part of this bill that have a more significant fiscal impact upon our division of ODOT.
Follow up? Yes, thank you. The second question is, what is the potential impact on local government and local law enforcement?
Madam Chair, Representative Nathanson, I really don't know. It'd be purely supposition for me to determine what that effect would be. I think where Senator Gordley was going is you may have additional people who are driving without a license, without insurance, and potentially you might have more law enforcement interaction with those individuals as a result of that. But that's purely supposition on my part of what the effect would be. We have not identified anything specifically as an effect on local government, though.
Thank you. And my last question, follow-up. Thank you. What we have in front of us from LFO is a very precise and narrowly focused set of costs. What I suspect is that there are other costs beyond just these of doing this, and there are costs of not doing this. How does this relate to other funds that the state receives or costs other than just those specific in this particular area of this one agency? What are the other kinds of costs?
Are you asking Mr. McClellan?
I'm not sure who is the most.
Mr. McClellan, would you like to take first crack at that? No, I think he would like Mr. Walker to take first.
Co-Chair Nolan, members of the committee, Representative Nathanson. By statute, LFO is only able to take into account those costs that essentially are directly in front of us, and those are the highway fund, other fund, general fund, lottery fund type costs. And we don't necessarily have an opportunity to look at, for example, economic impacts into the communities and how that might affect, you know, for example, health care. If people are driving unlicensed, uninsured, and they get into an accident, how that's going to affect health insurance or things like that. Those are much more speculative in that our, you know, by statute, we're much more circumscribed in what we can take into account.
Mr. McClellan, are there federal funds at risk?
Madam Chair, no, they are not.
Okay. Representative Colizio?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Mr. McClellan, I had a question about, you know, at our institutions of higher education, we have international students and often faculty visiting professors. And there's a concern among many in that, in the university and college community, a lot of those international faculty, they're not eligible for social security numbers, they're not employed per se by the Oregon University system, and they're on these visas. Mm-hmm. So the question is, while the bill is pretty clear about people who are, you know, legally present and can provide some kind of valid documentation, the question for those, let's say, international faculty or students, how can you explain the process of how they would provide proof that they're not eligible for a social security number?
Madam Chair, Representative Calizio, it is a form that we use, that we're using it today, but it would state that, certify that the individual is not eligible for a social security number. The individuals you described, faculty, students from abroad that are here on a student or a work visa, short term, but for a specific purpose, they're going to have an immigration document, a document issued by the Department of Homeland Security. They can sign that certification in good conscience that they are not eligible because they are not in this country, you know, as a citizen, and that they're not eligible for a Social Security number. So they can sign that form, and then they need to prove that they are legally in the country, and that's for the immigration document. They'd have to produce that student visa or that work visa to us as part of that identification process for getting the driver's license or the ID card. So it's merely a certification. It's saying at the bottom line that I'm not eligible to receive or to apply for a Social Security card.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson?
Thank you. Sticking with this same conversation about resources and the fiscal impact, in Section 34 of the bill, it talks about the establishment of an ombudsman program. And as I understand the bill, it directs you to use existing resources. Having just gone through devastating floods in my district, where we're now down to trying to deal with insurance policies literally on a case-by-case basis for people who have fallen through the cracks, and I presume that's what the Ombuds program is designed to do, we're finding it enormously time-consuming, personnel-intensive. And I want you to talk to the panel a little bit, if you would, about how out of existing resources you think you'll have enough money to have a robust Ombudsman program, because that's the default for folks that are frustrated by the system and people that are legitimately entitled to driver's licenses and unable to produce the required identification. Talk about how in existing resources you're going to manage a robust Ombudsman program.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, to be honest, it would be difficult to provide as robust an ombudsman program as you described. But what we have done for the governor's executive order is we formed a special unit within our call center of six people, half to take those special calls, those unique ones where people just need help getting through the process. Who do I call? Where do I go? How much does it cost? All those types of questions. And each person has a unique situation. So that group has been formed largely with temporary staff. So I can't say it's a permanent solution that we put in place. We put it there, a group, and train them in anticipation of the change of the governing executive order, and we'll be evaluating it weekly and monthly as we go along to see what the need is, number of calls, and the types of cases that we need to respond to. But as we've checked with other state agencies that have comparable type ombudsman programs, they have at least one and sometimes three or four positions at a higher level than our call agents, our phone agents are at, that ideally we get some additional resources to do that. But that's not the way the bill is written, and so our fiscal did not include that as an additional cost for the bill.
Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Mr. McClellan, as the question applied to the verification of documents through Homeland Security, I thought I read, and I'm searching through the documentation, but is there not a direct link from the Department of Motor Vehicles to the Homeland Security, much like you have for Social Security verification?
Madam Chair, Representative Hannah, what's proposed here is that we would connect up to a system system-wide alien verification and enrollment system or something. It's SAVE is what it stands for. Department of Homeland Security has had that system in place. About 20 state motor vehicle agencies have hooked up to it today. What's proposed here is by January of next year, we would connect up to that system and start to use it. We are in the process of improving and beefing up that system for all 50 to 51 jurisdictions to be able to use it a little more industrial strength than what they have right now. And so eventually we will probably have to upgrade whatever we do and put in place by January 1. But it's new functionality that we don't have today. That's your question.
Thank you. Mr. McClellan, are you familiar with the use of that system in other states? Is it basically an online system that would give you virtually immediate access to that? I mean, when you are linked up, you are at the counter at a DMV office, the documentation is presented, and you would same time connect to that data?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Hannah, we would do that at the time of issuance, at the time the person is in at the counter as part of the process. It's not hours and it's seconds is what we've been told the response time is.
Thank you.
Mr. McClellan, I have a question. It's my understanding, both in the bill and in the rules that the department follows, someone who presents for an initial driver's license or identification card has to present a certain combination of documents. They do not necessarily have to include a picture that identifies that person as connected with those documents. A passport would be nice, but in the absence of a passport, a series of documents without pictures would be sufficient. Am I understanding that correctly?
I'm sure that is possible. For example, a birth certificate can be used for attending.
So then someone gets their initial document from you, but then it is also my understanding that if that person has that document stolen or it is lost or somehow needs to be replaced, you will not accept your own picture of that person as verification that that person is who they are. And they then have to go back and get paper documents that don't provide a picture. And you would rely on their assertion that they are the person identified in those documents?
Madam Chair, we do have previous photos for individuals that have been issued ID cards and driver licenses. Today, that's a visual inspection by our employee at the counter. So if you come in to replace a card that you've lost, we're going to expect you to bring a document that also ties you to that identity document. But we're also going to visually take a look at that previous photo. We're not going to rely solely on that previous photo to make sure that that's you, because right now it's a visual inspection, and two people can look pretty much alike as in twins can look pretty much alike. What we're doing with the executive order is that we must bring in a document, and as part of the process, we'll check that previous photo to increase the likelihood of issuing it to the right person.
Just so I understand, your own biometric photo is not sufficient to identify that person as the person whose photograph it is, but somehow a piece of paper that simply has a name and address and maybe a birth date is more sufficient to identify that person?
Madam Chair, I wouldn't say it's more sufficient. It's just what you have at the time to prove the identity, and the photo for a replacement makes it that much easier, much a better solid process for us to issue.
Thank you. Further discussion or questions?
Thank you. There's been some discussion and suggestion in the past about a two-tier system, two different kinds of licenses. That's not part of what we're looking at today. Can you tell me anything about how it came that it's not part of what we're looking at today, and what the was it because of fiscal impacts, or is that any part of the reason?
Madam Chair, Representative Nathanson, you might have to ask the sponsor of the bill what the intent was there. We've worked with various legislators to try to discern the intent behind it and to come up with language that matches that intent. But this bill does not have a provision for a riding on the bike card. That it actually is a permitted option for the federal regulations that came out recently. It's an option a state could pursue. I believe only one or two states today are actually issuing such a card.
Thank you, Mr. McClellan. Representative Beyer.
I can't totally answer the exact reason, but I will say there was a bipartisan group that met in late in 07 to sit down and discuss what they thought we needed to do with this bill, and that was not part of the recommendations of that group to add that at this time.
Representative Shields.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. As I saw that the questions were wrapping up, I would wonder if this is a a good time to explain my no vote, or would you prefer to?
I think you've made an astute observation that the questions have about wrapped up, so final discussion.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, we've had a long discussion about this, and in many ways this is about driver's license, but I think the overarching issue is that this is about immigration. Oregonians have had it with open borders. Oregonians have had it with outsourcing. And they are particularly angry with rogue companies that are looking for cheap labor at any cost, who offer no loyalty to their employees, no loyalty to country. They've had it with lawbreakers. They've had it with lawmakers who don't get it. This concern about immigration is not just a smokescreen for racism. I think people's concerns on immigration are real and legitimate. And I'm going to put the blame for the problem where I believe it belongs. The people coming here to work didn't want to leave their homes, their parents, and their relatives, and the communities where they grew up. Quoting Andrew Levison, they are economic refugees from an economic Hurricane Katrina unleashed in Mexico and other Latin countries by the extremist free market policies pushed by the International Monetary Fund and unfair trade practices that have been championed in Washington ever since the 1980s. So I'm going to be voting no, Madam Co-Chair, because although this addresses a legitimate problem in the rule of law, I say to you this, I want to send a message that I've had it with the underlying unfair trade policies that drive migration, unfair trade policies that are driving jobs out of this country and driving undocumented workers into this country in search for a living for their families. But this isn't just about economics. It's also about people fleeing political persecution. Back home, I have a friend who's undocumented. His three brothers were murdered in Guatemala in the wake of the overthrow of the democratically elected Arbenz government in 1954, an overthrow that our government assisted in. And he's likely to be deported soon because he cannot adequately document his family's political persecution. So I just hope that we keep in mind that among the 12 million undocumented people who are in this country, there are 12 million stories as well. To the 17,000 people who have come to the Capitol for the first time to ask us not to do this, you were heard, and I'll be voting no. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Schroeder.
Madam Chair, I move or suggest and request we...
Who would like... I think I'm done. I'm sorry, was there more questions?
I'm willing to move the bill.
I move the bill.
Yes.
I would like to join Representative Shields and make a quick statement about this also to explain my no vote. Generally, in these million ways and means, we stick to physical questions and physical answers, but because of the way this bill has come to us, I feel I have to make a short statement. I'll try not to take too much time.
Okay.
6 months, seven, 8 months ago, we decided to go to a supplemental session, a limited session, limited topics. We were going to try not to take on serious issues that took more time to look at. This is a serious issue. What has been its history? It was worth the interim. It was passed out of committee after 36 hours of the session. It has come here with no other significant debate. Most of us had no chance to offer amendments to it. It's 36 hours in committee. It's not going to go to the floor in the Senate, floor in the House, and not go to a committee in the House. A similar bill in the House failed to get out of committee in the interim. So this bill is going through with very little debate of any type. And I think that's my first concern with the bill. In addition, we're dealing with something of significant moral ethical issues here. In the next 9 months, we're going to have a different administration in Washington, D.C., and this question may change dramatically. We know that Real ID is not going to be enforced until 2014. Getting on an airplane, going to the federal building with a driver's license will be allowed until that time. There's no rush to do this. The real purpose of a driver's license, as we talked about earlier tonight, is public safety. So why are we doing this right now? We're doing it because of failed policies of the federal government. An inability of the federal government to sustain and maintain and develop a reasonable immigration policy, failure to have a good guest worker program. So states are scrambling because the federal government is trying to force us into a hodgepodge of regulations that I think will never work. I've not heard a thing tonight that makes me feel safer as an American about what we're doing with driver's licenses. There's no real history here or real evidence to me that the driver's licenses we'll be issuing are going to be going to people who are not who they say they aren't. I just don't believe that. And I don't think you really believe it either. Not really. I think we have an ethical and moral problem before us. The people we are affecting are our friends and our neighbors, members of our communities. They cook our food, they build our homes, they plant our trees, they work at our factories, they go to the same churches. Their children attend school with my children. And how we treat these people defines us as a people, and what diminishes any one of us diminishes all of us. So my question to this committee is to think long and carefully. Do we really need to do this tonight? And are we really doing the right thing? I will admit there is a serious problem with people coming to the state to get an 8-year license on an initial basis. We should be doing what many other states are doing and requiring these IDs for the initiation of new licenses and not for renewals, and buying some time till we know what's going to happen in our uncertain future. So that's why I'm voting no tonight. Thank you. Thank you for your forbearance, both of you.
Thank you, Senator. I am ready for a motion.
Madam Co-Chair.
Senator Schrader.
Senate Bill 1080A to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation, and recommend we include limitation of position authority in our omnibus budget bill.
Thank you. Mr. Rocco, call the roll, please.
Senator Gordley.
Yes. Would you say Gordley?
We'll get your chance.
Senator Johnson.
Yes.
Senator Bates.
No.
Senator Nelson.
Aye.
Senator Courtney.
Yes.
Senator Whitsitt.
Aye.
Senator Monroe.
Aye.
Vice Chair Carter.
No.
Co-Chair Schrader.
Aye.
Representative Morgan.
Aye.
Representative Hannah.
Aye.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Representative Grazio.
Aye.
Representative Shields.
No.
Representative Edwards.
Aye.
Vice Chair Nathanson.
No.
Co-Chair Nolan.
No.
Motion carries.
There will be no further business before this committee. We are adjourned.